And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Mitch Pomp. It's co-host Dan Ford. How you doing, Dan?
I got the hiccups. This might be a bad recording. Uh-oh. Oh, God.
Not after last week. I think we have set the bar low.
Yeah, the immediately regretted fourth part of a thing that should have only been two parts.
Yes. But you could. It's really a thing that has to be like 20 parts.
It has to be like a lapsed fan situation.
Yeah.
Like where 3 months later you check back in and they're still talking about world-class championship wrestling.
Yeah, we probably could have done like a good 12 hours on that. Like, realistically. Well, we didn't. So, but today we're talking Outlaw Football Leagues.
Woo!
So I'm recording this on the day that the current Outlaw Football League, the AAF, the Alliance of American Football, is that what?
Yes.
Okay.
I love being a member of the Alliance.
Almost.
Once again, Vince has got to face an alliance.
Yeah. This
his greatest enemy.
This whole thing almost fell apart today because they couldn't even make payroll after week one.
Oops. Yeah.
With a lot of fucking TV exposure, mind you. Like, they got a network slot, you know?
Well, nothing I mean, you notice
what's going on.
Everybody involved in the AAF is either a NFL person or somebody involved in the TV business. Yeah. Not necessarily a lot of people who know a lot about regular business and, like, finances. I haven't seen any, like, economists involved in this.
Yeah, and I had to get saved today. I'm able to, at least everyone got paid, though, because that would have sucked. Because did you see the Deadspin article by the former player who, like, I think he played for the UFL?
And they Nate Jackson.
Yeah.
He's written a lot of stuff for Deadspin in the past.
Yeah. Everybody was promised, like, six figures, and then, like, everyone signed up. They're like, LOL, no, it's going to be 30 grand.
And it's like, well, that's 30 grand to do my dream. Okay.
Yeah. And then, like, I think, what, he tore his hamstring off the bone or something.
Yeah. Well, his hamstring was already fucked, but he rushed back out there to get involved in this fucking outlaw horseshit and then immediately destroyed his body forever.
And that tends to be, like, the really bad part when we look at these outlaw leagues. It's like, guys are putting their body on the line and, like, getting screwed out of money that they probably deserved.
Yeah. I mean, there are multiple. I mean, one of the things when you talk about the history of all outlaw pro leagues of, like, startup, we're going to compete with the man type of football leagues is that there are every one of these sports, and especially football, have had these vaporware leagues where they never even did anything. Like, it barely existed and nobody got paid and everybody lost their ass.
Yeah, like the UFL. What was it, the UFL?
The UFL in the late 2000s and the WFL in the 70s are the ones that really spring to mind.
Yeah.
There's like two where it's like, oh, that didn't even come close to succeeding.
Yeah. And like the hard truth was, like, a lot of times, if the NFL wants you, they probably already have you.
Yeah, there's, you know, and what we'll get into this is, like, the history, like, when these leagues are kind of successful is when you have smaller leagues where you have major cities that don't have a team.
Yeah.
And as the NFL has expanded, it's made it very, very hard. That's why when everybody talks about, like, the NBA contracting, that was, like, a thing 10 years ago, or baseball contracting, that shit never happens because the minute you start doing that, you open the door to a competing league.
Yeah.
Starting up and, like, oh, there's not a team in Minneapolis and you've got a bunch of pissed off people. You know, you don't want that. You don't want there to be major cities in America where there's not a team.
Yeah. Because it kind of hurt the NBA with Seattle. It definitely hurt the reputation more than anything else.
Well, it definitely hurt the presidential hopeful, Howard Schultz's chance of being president, since he's most famous for being associated with giving his city's team away to a bunch of Oklahoma rednecks.
Yeah.
By God!
Which is, like, pretty wild. It really shows how cheap that guy is. That might be, like, the cheapest rich guy of all time.
Yeah, he sold away his city's team to people who were openly talking about moving it.
Not only that, but, like, a team that, like, had good history and probably could have stayed profitable. He just, like, didn't get his new arena right away.
And just vindictively killed the franchise by trading it to people who he knew were going to... Like a historic
franchise.
Yeah. Howard Schultz. Really stupid idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, like, always wild to me. Because, like, it's an NBA. Like, NBA teams... I know some lose money, but you don't really lose money, right?
What's that famous thing that Michael Jordan told the then Washington Wizards owner during the lockout in 98?
What was that?
The guy complained he was losing $50 million a year or something, and Michael Jordan says, well, then you're an idiot. Sell your team. If you can lose money at pro basketball, you're an idiot. Yeah. And that guy hired him to be his president of his franchise. Because that's how weird rich white dudes are. They've literally never been told by anybody they're an idiot. And so when someone does it for the first time, they either make it their life's mission to destroy them, or they then make them their second in command.
Yeah.
All rich white dudes do this.
So yeah, but we're going to talk about some leagues here. Some made money, most didn't. Luna can start with the first, like this weird pre-NFL football landscape in America.
Yeah.
Things first started. Because originally there was... what was the first league here? Let me look at my notes.
The main thing when you're talking about this era of football is that the thing people wanted the most is college. Like, college football was so much more popular.
Yeah.
And then you just have this period where everyone keeps trying... You know, there's some money in this. If we can just make this professional and then we own the teams instead of these colleges, we can make a lot of money. And it's just like, oh, no, we can't. Oh, nobody wants to watch this. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
There's these growing pains of, like, trying to figure out how to make money at a thing when the most popular version of that thing is owned and operated by colleges that you cannot buy into.
Yeah, so actually, like professional football in America, low key started when colleges just started paying guys, and then like
so that would be like 1880.
Yeah, and then around the turn of a century, a group called the American Athletic Union, the Amateur Athletic Union, pretty much said like, hey, we're gonna like kind of not let you pay players anymore. We're kind of sick of this. People need to stay amateurs. Take away your status. And I believe, like, the NCAA, or, like, that version of the NCAA at the time kind of agreed. So let's see. NCAA was formed in 1906, yeah. So around that time is, like, colleges can't pay players anymore. People want to go somewhere. So we get the first National Football League of 1902. And this was the first professional league in American history.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, but this is not the NFL that we see today. No. This one would collapse.
You mean the first football league?
Yes.
Okay.
First professional.
Because the National League Baseball had been around since like the
1870s. Yes. So, I think it started in five cities. They were all like weirdly associated with major league teams. Once like the modern MLB came to be, though, the NFL just kind of went away.
Well, the Major League Baseball was formed by the merger of two competing baseball leagues.
Yeah.
The American League and the National League.
Yeah.
Which had many overlapping markets, which that took another 50 years for that to get solved by westward expansion.
Yeah.
But, you know. So the creation of the World Series, and keep that in mind. What is it that killed the NFL? It was the Major League Baseball leagues merging together and creating a super event at the end of the year to crown the best champion.
Yeah.
Keep that in the back of your head.
Yeah. So, like, professional football, like, definitely stays a big thing, especially in the Rust Belt. So, like, Canton, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia. This is the era where you see, like, pro football really thrive and, like, kind of keep the flame going during, like, the Depression age and everything. And then was it around 1915... You get your first big football star, Jim Thorpe.
The man who was booted out of the Olympics because he had the temerity to make money, which we could not allow because the Olympics is just for rich European royalty who don't want to have to compete with blacks or Indians or really Americans of any kind.
But 1920, you get the American Professional Football Association. In 1922, this became the National Football League that we know and love today. And then Dan, you want to go from there? Who's like kind of the first team you have on your notes of importance, though?
Well, I mean, you always got the Maroons. I mean, because what a fantastic name for a team.
But I'm sorry, what was the first league? Like, when's like the AFL as we know it? Like, when is that?
So the first like real competitor to the NFL, like where you really go, okay, somebody's going to give it a run for their money on the NFL, is the AAFC, which comes around in the late 40s. And really their big draw was they allowed black players to play in their league. And when you look at who was the team that really made the AAFC, it was Paul Brown's Cleveland Browns. Paul Brown had been the legend of all legends coaching at the high school level in the 20s and 30s in Ohio. He had gone from coaching Ohio high school football to being a coach at Ohio State. In some ways, was kind of the first guy to really turn Ohio State into a real successful program in the Big Ten. For years, Ohio State had just been the whipping boy of like every other Big Ten program. Like traditionally, Ohio State had just always gotten their teeth kicked in by Michigan and Chicago, who were the two big powers in the Big Ten pre-1950. And he turned Ohio State into a winner. Then the war happens. He gets drafted. He leaves Ohio State. And then when the war is over, he needs to coach football. This new league starts up. And they named the team after him because Paul Brown had a pretty big ego.
Yeah.
And so this was his Cleveland. I mean, they were the Cleveland Browns. They were Paul Brown's Cleveland
team. But Brown did a lot to advance professional football.
He basically invented what we now call coaching.
Yeah.
Like film study.
Year round. Yeah. Year round. You know? It being a real job year round.
Like, he invented the idea of, like, the way you call plays. Because before Paul Brown. Before Paul Brown, the quarterback just decided what he was going to do.
Yeah.
Paul Brown invented the idea of like, well, actually the coach might have an idea of what's a good play to run here. You know, he invented the first radio that went into a helmet.
Yeah, and also like I think had a big hand in the face mask being used.
He invented the first face mask, yeah.
Yeah, which probably saved football.
Yeah. And his football team, his Cleveland Browns, were the team that integrated pro football. And they were so successful that the NFL basically said, well, I guess we need to start doing that too.
Yeah, some of these teams were outdrawing NFL teams by the end of the 40s.
Yeah. But, and so what ends up, he's the reason why the Rams ended up in LA, because the Rams were originally the Cleveland Rams of the NFL, and they could not sell tickets because the Cleveland Browns were so much more popular. So they moved to LA, and that started the entire professional football. Like, basically, the Cleveland Browns are responsible for professional football and professional sports expanding to the West Coast because the Cleveland Rams did it out of desperation. And then after that, you have the LA Dodgers and then San Francisco Giants and the San Francisco 49ers starting up from scratch. So it all starts because of Cleveland running the Rams out of town.
Yeah, so what the three teams that go from the AAFC to the NFL after the merger in 1949, you get the Baltimore Colts would be the Colts, who aren't the Colts that we know of today, actually.
Yeah, they end up moving to Dallas, right?
Yeah. They
becoming the original Dallas Texans, not the Dallas Texans from 10 years later.
This is like the team that kind of became Kansas City later on, right?
No, it's a different Dallas Texans.
Oh, okay.
They were the original Dallas Texans, and they flopped in the 50s, and they went bankrupt. And then when the AFL started up, they put a team in Dallas, which, okay, we'll get to this later. But yeah, it's not the same. It's not the same Texans. It's not the same Cowboys.
It's not even the same Colts. Technically, because that Browns team went to Baltimore.
Yeah, that Browns team's in Baltimore now.
Yeah, the only one who stayed, and they're still in the Bay Area at least, the 49ers, who were probably, you could say, probably one of the biggest franchises in the NFL in terms of name recognition.
Yeah.
You know, not maybe not so much anymore, but go talk to, like, your grandparents. They probably, like, your grandmother who doesn't know anything about football probably knows about the 49ers for some reason.
That Joe Montana was just so cute.
Yeah. And OJ, like, it was a big deal.
But the big one is the Cleveland Browns. And famously, the first year the Browns joined the NFL, the NFL commissioner put them against the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles, thinking that they were going to kill them. And then Cleveland just completely destroyed Philadelphia. Famously, like, Cleveland's, like, Paul Brown kind of invented making the passing game the basis of your offense. And everybody in the NFL thought that was, for lack of a better word, queer. And so later in that first season, the Cleveland Browns were in the NFL, when everybody was complaining that they had been unfair to throw so many passes, they are the only team in the history of the NFL to play an entire game without ever throwing a pass. They beat a team like 9-0 just running the ball every single play just to prove they were that much better than everybody in the NFL.
So we don't really see another competing league, though, until when? The 1960s.
1960. The big thing that changes everything, and this changes everything about pro football, is the 1958 NFL championship game. It's called the greatest game ever played. It's not actually that good, spoiler alert, between the Baltimore Colts and the New York Giants. They went down. They went to the very first overtime ever played in the NFL championship game, and Johnny Unitas' Colts won. It made everybody on that Colts team and everybody on that Giants team the most famous athletes playing football. And it was this it was the first huge rated NFL game in the history of television. Well, within a year, there was a bunch of dudes sitting around a table going, you know, we should start a league of our own and put it on this other network, NBC, because at the time the NFL was on CBS. You know, if we put this, like, NBC was dying to get football. And so it was basically NBC sitting down in a room with a bunch of rich dudes going, why don't you guys make us a football league so we can put it on television? And by 1960, you had a new league, and it was called the American Football League.
Yeah, and part of this, too, was Lamar Hunt, Bud Adams, two very rich Texas Oilmen, tried to buy an NFL team. The NFL said, no, we don't want to add another team. We don't want to do none of that shit. We're happy with 12 teams.
Yep.
So we do not want to expand to 14 teams.
Yeah.
That is too many teams, is what the NFL said. So, thus, with the need there, the AFL, the fourth AFL in American football history, was born.
Yeah, and so you have the main teams in the AFL. You had the New York Titans, who would become the New York Jets. Mm-hmm. The Dallas Texans, who would move to Kansas City and become the Chiefs. The reason why is because the year before the AFL started, their first season, I believe, was 61, the NFL hurriedly rushed a team into existence called the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah,
who ended up becoming, captured the hearts of the city of Dallas. Yeah. And so by the time the new Dallas Texans got started, the Cowboys had already beat them to the market, and they ended up moving to Kansas City, where they became extremely popular and very successful in the AFL. The Miami Dolphins, who would suck ass and did not win anything until after the merger. The Houston Oilers, who were the first dominant team, Bud Adams' team. They were the first AFL champion. They were the first really dominant program there. And a little team that would end up defining the AFL, but their first year they were the worst team in the league until some 31-year-old was hired from the staff of USC by a Jewish guy with a Southern accent named Al Davis, came to the Oakland Raiders. And you can't even find clips of the Oakland Raiders' first season. I can't even find pictures of their uniforms. Did you know the first year Oakland Raiders wore gold jerseys?
No.
Yeah, I've read that. I can't find any evidence of it because Al Davis destroyed all records and evidence that team ever existed before him. Yeah. But he was hired as their head coach and general manager in their second season. He changed the uniforms. He changed their style of play. He changed their roster almost completely. And in 1 year, he engineered, at the time, the biggest difference between a one-year record. They went from one win to 10 wins overnight.
Yeah. And you had a lot of
would become games. The most success and would become the most successful franchise
in the history of the AFL. Other big names early in the AFL that led to success. You had Hank Stram, who would go on to have success in the Super Bowl, something we'll talk about later. But in Buffalo, you had Lou Saban, yeah. who did you know Nick Saban's second cousin, apparently.
Did not know that.
Allegedly.
They claim. People are claiming that.
Yeah, well, that's what he claimed. So there's just
And when you look at what the AFL did, and the AFL employed a strategy that other leagues that were successful, the ABA springs to mind, because the ABA was really, let's do the AFL for basketball.
Yeah.
But it was like, let's go and bid on the quarterbacks. Let's go bid on the most famous players coming out of college and get them and not necessarily worry about, do we have the best defensive tackle? Let's not worry about if we got the best linebackers, because people are really coming to see passes and to see offense. So if we've got better versions of that than the NFL does, we'll be fine. And they're right. You know, Joe Namath was the highest paid professional football player in the history of the sport. He got a six-figure contract plus a brand new Lincoln Continental. You know, and it was like, yeah, he completely changed the Jets franchise. He put them on the map. I mean, they had been the Titans.
And I didn't see anything of this. Were AFL games, like, any different than NFL games at the time? Like, were they, like, faster or anything like that?
The rules were the same, but the biggest difference was the defenses weren't nearly as good because mm-hmm. they just didn't spend the money on defensive players, by and large.
Yeah, and, like,
and so the games were way more exciting.
Yeah. Because, like, I think the famous thing with the ABA was, like, was way more high-scored than the NBA at the time.
Well, the ABA had those like unofficial rules where you just didn't foul the best players on the opposing teams hard. Like Julius Erving, if he had been playing in the NBA in the 70s, particularly in the 70s, they would have immediately tried to cut his legs out from under him because he had bad knees.
Yeah.
In the ABA, it's like, well, yeah, that would have helped us win the game, but then the league would have gone out of business.
Yeah, we're going to make Julius a lot Erving. More money. Yeah. It's kind of guys getting like the entertainment aspect behind it, especially when you're competing. Sometimes you don't mind if the game's a little more exciting. You didn't dominate because you probably
two of the biggest pro wrestling draws of the 70s also came out of the AFL. Big Cat Ernie Ladd and Wahoo McDaniel.
Yeah. So, what was it, 66? We get the first Super Bowl.
And that's the main thing is by the time you get the first Super Bowl, the leagues had merged.
Okay.
And so Al Davis leaves the Raiders to become the AFL commissioner, and Al Davis is the one who really starts leading the AFL into aggressively bidding on college talent to bring them over to the AFL. Like, that's his brainchild idea, is let's go straight at their jugular and compete. And it works. And it works so well that Lamar Hunt and Bud Adams go behind his back and negotiated with the NFL owners, who I believe were Rooney. I believe it was Rooney, old man Rooney, Art Rooney the first, and George Halas, I believe, was the other one. Went straight to them and negotiated a deal. Oh no, it was the owner of the Cowboys, because Lamar Hunt and Bud Adams knew him as like a Texas dude.
Yeah.
And they went straight to them and negotiated a deal where the leagues would merge and then play a game modeled after that World Series we talked about a couple of minutes ago, the World Series of football, match the two champions of each league against each other to find out who's really the best. And all the AFL teams joined the NFL, and, you know, there would be this four-year process where before the merger took place. And in the first year of the merger was 1970, because they had to wait for both of their TV contracts to run out. And they had to work out, and eventually what would end up happening is you'd get the NFC and the AFC with AFC games on NBC and NFC games on CBS. And then occasionally you get an NFC team and an AFC playing each other on Monday Night Football.
And a big thing the AFL did that I want to point out too is they kind of got pro football. They kind of got the pot stirring where it never had been before, and that was in the South.
Yes. They went into Texas.
Yeah, they went to Texas, but they also went to Miami, correct?
Yeah, they went into Miami. That didn't actually work. Nobody actually watched it.
Yeah.
Until after the merge. Like, basically, Don Shula left an NFL team to become the coach of the Dolphins, but it was after the merger had already happened.
Yeah. But this, like, went to the NFL, and that's when you see New Orleans and Atlanta get at it in the 60s.
Well, that's more because segregation ends.
Yeah. But it also showed, like, it's a market.
Absolutely.
This is a market that was traditionally known as, like, being more college football, like, even now.
Well, that's one of the big things that the Chiefs did, was the Chiefs were one of the big successes. Most of the AFL teams were in markets that already had an NFL team. The big differences would obviously be the Houston Oilers and the Kansas City Chiefs. And the Kansas City Chiefs actively marketed themselves as a college. Like, the Kansas City Chiefs reached out big time to Nebraska fans and Oklahoma fans and Missouri fans, fans that were, like, within driving distance of Kansas City, who, you know, who never had a pro team and probably were never going to get a pro team in their cities. And it's like, well, you could all come to Kansas City and we'll have this college atmosphere. They had a band. They had like the pep cheerleaders before everybody else did, you know, and it was like they tried to make it a very college atmosphere. And that's part of why the Chiefs were so successful.
Yeah. But also around this time in the 60s, you had like a lot of other leagues kind of pop up. You had the United Football League, which lasted 3 years. You had the Atlantic Coast Football League. You had the Professional Football League of America. The Continental Football League. The Continental Football League, I think, was like one of the more successful, like in terms of being a minor league team.
Yeah. A lot of these were actively just trying to be semi-pro leagues.
Yeah.
Like they weren't shooting for that.
Yeah, like there was a team in Hartford that Buffalo used, like an MLB team might use a minor league team.
Yeah.
Some success there. But really, after the AFL merger, what, the 70s, I think, the start of the decade, we don't see another outlaw football league. But then your favorite, Dan, is born.
Yeah, the World Football League.
Yes.
Some of the weirdest looking uniforms you've ever seen in your life. Yes. And some of the worst named teams you've ever heard of.
The Memphis Southmen.
Yes. You know why they're called that, right?
I had no idea.
They were supposed to be the Toronto Northmen. And then the CFL, the CFL went to the university, to people of Canada and said, you cannot let there be a pro football team based in America with a Toronto team. And then, Wayne Bassett, who was the owner of the Toronto Northmen, who's from Canada, then just moved his team to Memphis and changed the team to Southmen. Even though Southmen's not a thing anyone has ever said. Like, Northmen is apparently a thing they say up in Canada.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're men of the North.
And that was the only professional football team. Well, the only, like, I guess the XFL had one. And, like, I guess what the AAF does. But there was never, like, a major team in Memphis again after that.
Bullshit! The Showboats!
Well, oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Reggie White, motherfucker! How dare you?
I'm sorry. This was neither city would have a chance at an NFL franchise.
Right.
Yeah. And although the Tennessee
Oilers, Memphis did get the Titans for like 3 years.
Yeah, no, the Oilers played one season in Memphis.
I thought they played like three.
One.
Oh, while they were building the stadium in Nashville. I thought they got longer than that.
Nope.
That sucks. Memphis deserved more.
So but what
Memphis is so much better than Nashville, by the way. I know I say that a lot, but holy shit, you can fucking set Nashville on fire.
What went wrong with the World Football League? Because this thing lasted 1 year.
They had no money. Yeah. Like, and the biggest thing is they couldn't get a real TV deal.
Yeah.
That's the thing that you end up learning. What is the difference between the AFL and the World Football League and all those other little minor league teams that tried to that popped up trying to figure out, oh, all these like AFL players are getting dispersed because some of them are getting cut. You know, we can make a league out of the leftovers. No, you couldn't because you didn't have TV. The World Football League couldn't really nail down a TV deal, and they got their asses kicked because the thing with the World Football League is they tried to make a huge splash out of the gate by stealing a bunch of NFL players for these really crazy high salaries. Like, Kenny Stabler had a contract to go play for the New Orleans team in 2 years after his Raider contract was ending in 78, and he was going to, like, as soon as that season was up, he was going to go join the World Football League. And they signed a lot of big money contracts like that. And the most famous one is the Miami team signed the three of the best players on the Miami Dolphins. They signed Jim Kick, Paul Warfield, who at that time was almost retired. Like, he had been playing pro football for 15 years.
And by the way, this is all while the NFL Players Union is threatening to strike in spring of 74.
Yes.
That's the
thing.
And the big one. Like, labor strike.
Yeah. And the big one is Larry Zonka, who was probably the second or third best running back in the entire NFL.
Yeah, and probably the most famous fullback ever.
Jim Brown was pretty famous.
I thought he was a halfback.
No, he was a fullback, brother. You know.
And Larry Zonka almost also famous for recapping wrestling TV shows.
Yeah. Where's Larry Zonka?
Yeah, what? Did we ever get an update? Does he have...
He's going through rehab right now, but thoughts and prayers with Larry Zonka. Yeah. He's a cool dude.
So yeah,
they spent a ton of money, but they didn't really have the TV to make it all work, and they immediately went out of business.
Yeah, and they had teams. And, you know, 13 teams. What, there was one in Hawaii.
Yeah, they went. That was all extra crazy. Like, the idea that you're going to make any money with the travel playing in Hawaii was nuts.
Yeah.
It was just like a lot of like really rich dudes who didn't have any sense about how to run a football league, who just saw that the AFL worked and all those guys got to own NFL teams. And so they just tried to copy that and throw a ton of money at it and had no idea what they were doing, and everyone lost their ass.
Yeah. But Dan, we get to the 80s. We get probably the most famous outlaw football league, the USFL.
Which is basically just ABC thought they weren't getting enough pro football and wanted to have more pro football.
Yeah.
And so ABC sits down with the USFL. The guy who ends up running the USFL, their first commissioner, is a guy who had worked at ABC Sports for 20 years. And he basically put this deal together to put all these teams on with ABC. It was done in concert with a network, which is why it worked. The USFL or the World Football League didn't. And they put a bunch of teams out there and they played spring football. And the biggest thing that they did was they were willing to take kids out of college who had not graduated.
Yeah. So like they got Herschel Walker.
They got Herschel Walker. They got Doug Flutie. They got Steve Young. You know, they went out there and paid top dollar for major college stars. Reggie White, you know, a number of like big time players ended up in the USFL because they just paid more money for the stars. Jim Kelly went to the Houston Gamblers and turned down the Buffalo Bills, even though they had drafted him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he wanted to play someplace warmer and he went to the Houston, you know, he went to Houston.
Yeah. The league was pretty successful until, a guy we might know and love.
So there was two basic problems with the USFL. They did not do a good job of scouting out all the places they would end up having teams.
Yeah.
So you had some franchises where you had owners who really knew their market very well and did an excellent job of promoting in their market. The biggest success story of all of them was the Tampa Bay Bandits.
Yeah.
Who had one of the lowest payrolls in the USFL, but they had a great coach who was on his first head coaching job by the name of Steve Spurrier. They had Burt Reynolds as a co-owner, which didn't hurt. And they were really, really good at marketing their team to the people in Tampa Bay. It didn't help. It didn't hurt that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were the biggest joke franchise in the NFL.
Yeah.
And were like the losingest bunch of jokers of all.
If you're a pro football fan in Tampa Bay at that time, which probably means you're like a transplant, so like you probably have to pick a team. Probably going to pick the one that has, like, better uniforms and is winning.
It's not a surprise that 10 years later when the Buccaneers changed their uniform, they basically changed their uniforms to look exactly like the Bandits.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, everything. They have the same colors. They have the same, like, helmet design. Like, it's just, like, everything about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they redesigned to look like the
Tampa Bay Bandits. but things are like not perfect, but things are going well. And then
sure. Well, but even immediately you have franchises that are just not working.
Yeah.
Like the San Antonio team never, like they used to always joke, the guys who played for San Antonio, that as soon as practice was over, everybody would just go on a cannonball run trying to get to the bank to cash their checks first, because they knew after two or three guys cashed their checks, it would all start bouncing.
Yeah.
Like that was like that franchise always had nothing but trouble. The Philadelphia Stars were probably the best team in the league and never could get any fans. Like they ended up having to move to Baltimore.
Yeah, because to be fair, the Eagles, right? Like the Eagles are one of the NFL's like most historic franchises. It's not like doing a rival team in Philadelphia is a pretty dumb move, in my opinion.
Yeah, but they put together a great team that just could not draw in their market.
Yeah, because I think when you're doing these markets, and we'll kind of talk about that later on, maybe with the AFL or whatever, don't pick markets that have like a very established NFL team that's very popular. And right. Like the Eagles in the 80s were pretty damn good and popular.
Yes.
You know,
You know, you're just coming off Dick Vermeil making a Super Bowl run. And that was one of them, like those magical teams in Philadelphia history that everybody just got behind. So, you know, it didn't really work out for them. But
like this, then you would probably
a certain person buy into the league starting in the second season.
Yeah. Who, first off, hates the concept of spring football, which is like, kind of the reason it worked. So what, he moves the games to the fall. Also, this particular fellow, Mr. Donnie Trump, wanted to get an NFL team, was rejected, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
He had tried to buy the Bills. No, he tried to buy the Bills during the Apprentice times.
Yeah,
right. But he had sniffed around trying to buy the Giants, and Wellington Mara just told him to piss off a rope.
Yeah.
I think he'd also tried to buy the Jets, and that wasn't going anywhere
either. Yeah, also because you need a lot of money to buy an NFL team, even in the 80s, which they probably didn't trust that he had.
Yeah. Yeah, Trump was one of those, like, to buy into the NFL at the time, you needed to be like a, not just a rich dude, but a rich dude who knew other rich dudes for a long time.
You need to be a rich dude who could stand and lose $100 million and like it wouldn't hurt you that much in modern day money terms.
Yeah.
You know,
like
if you were Jeff Bezos,
yes. Like
that's the NFL owner they want.
What Trump always, and we're talking about our current president, Donald Trump, what he looked at the USFL was a way to backdoor his way into owning an NFL team.
Yeah.
He buys the New York team, which is the New York, New Jersey Generals, because they played in the Meadowlands. And he immediately ups their payroll by an insane amount.
Yeah.
He ends up going out there and buying, you know, Brian Sipe, who had just won an NFL MVP award for the Cleveland Browns. Within a year, he had replaced Brian Sipe with Doug Flutie. He spends a ton of money on Herschel Walker. You know, he basically spends way more money than every other team in the league. And he kind of forced the rest of the league to start upping their payroll in a way that really wasn't sustainable.
Yeah, because it wasn't like a gradual increase, which is like the way you want to see that happen. Because there was probably no salary cap.
Correct? No, there wasn't. You basically have the league breaking down into, are you on Donald's side or are you on Wayne Bassett's side, who was the owner of the Tampa Bay Bandits?
Yeah.
And a lot of people listened to him because, one, he was making money off of a team in a, you know, without having to spend a ton of money. So, and he had been involved in the World Football League. So, like, people were like, okay, this guy's, he's been to a goat fucking before.
Yeah.
Like, this ain't his first rodeo. But Donald Trump was the most famous businessman in America at the time. So a lot of the owners followed him. And Wayne Bassett ends up getting cancer, which, you know, ends up kind of taking him out of the fight. Donald Trump ends up convincing them that, Donald Trump's not totally wrong, as much as I would love to say he was. You had multiple teams in the USFL that were going to go bankrupt. They could not meet their payroll. And so what Trump argued is, our only way of having any success out of this is if we go into the fall, run head to head with the NFL, and then try to sue them for antitrust. That's what they did. they won their lawsuit, and then they got awarded, what was it, 7 cents?
Well, I thought it was like a dollar.
Yeah, I think it was like 1 penny multiplied by 7 or something. The reason why they got such a low amount was that they were found to be partially culpable by moving head-to-head in the fall. So Donald Trump has a long history of sabotaging his own court cases with stupid antics. But that was the end of the USFL, you know. Yeah. And the argument is always going to be that the USFL was immediately hamstrung by the fact that they had these owners who could not afford a team, who did not understand their markets, who did not have the flexibility to keep the league going. And that put this ticking time bomb on the league,
yeah, and
that kept it from being able to grow naturally.
And for better or worse, Donnie Trump and other owners forced the league to kind of grow up too fast. Which, like, you can't, as boring as it sounds, the most successful way to do this stuff is to gradually, like, get more popular or spend more money.
Basically, you had, on the one end, you had owners who wanted to slowly grow a team and build a fan base like Tampa did. Where it was like, we're going to start our payroll slow and concentrate on promoting the team in our market, putting on a brand of football that the people in our market will want to see, and then grow the payroll gradually. You had those guys on one side, and then you had guys like Donald Trump who wanted to be a big shot pro football owner.
Yeah, which is not the worst people to have. It's just
you either got to have 12 Donald Trumps or you got to have 12 Donald or Wayne Bassett. Or you can't have a mixture.
Or you needed a leader who could do the best, like who could kind of do the miracle thing and best of both worlds. But that's the guy who's probably in the NFL, NBA, or MLB.
Because right.
Say what you want, but like that's what guys like Tags, or Goodell, or C-League, or even Stern, that's what they're pretty good at, is getting these rich people and like finding a common ground to make things work.
Right. And you could not find a guy. One of the other reasons you couldn't find a guy like that is because to have a U.S. like the number one priority for a USFL commissioner was not that finding a guy like that. It was finding a guy who had TV contacts.
Yeah.
Who could get you a TV deal.
Yeah. And it's really hard to find. Like, these are very, like, cause,
which basically means you had to, you had to hire a guy who had worked for ABC.
Yeah.
So when so you've got to try to find a guy who's going to be able to unite all these owners in the same direction, who's going to have a big picture idea
who's also
worked for ABC.
Yeah, and who's also not still at ABC because he's really good. Like, you're not picking the best talent.
It's a guy who's been cut loose by ABC.
Yeah.
But who still has friends there.
Yeah. League folds. And then we get to the early 90s and we get two leagues. So you want to talk about the CFL or what later became NFL Europe first?
You have that other weird league that starts up trying to basically be USFL 2.
Uh-huh.
That has a lot of the people involved from the USFL. And oh, man, did that fail. Oh, man, did that not do
well. Which one was that?
I cannot remember the name
of it. That wasn't the World League of American Football, was it?
That was it. That was it.
Okay,
the World League of American Football.
That one later, we'll go ahead and talk about it now. That one becomes NFL Europe, which is probably the most successful outlaw football league, if you will.
Well, can you really call it outlaw football when the NFL owned
it? Exactly, if you will. We'll talk about that one. This was, more or less pretty successful. It was featured in, six different countries. It did start off as the World
League. Mostly, it only was successful in Germany.
Yes. And that's because of the big military presence there, right?
You had two things. One, you had Germans there for forever, who'd been exposed to Americans playing football, GIs playing football. And two, you still had a bunch of GIs stationed in Germany.
Yeah, and
for whatever reason,
but even to this day, football's pretty popular in Germany, compared to the rest of Europe.
You just have such a huge American influence on Germany because of, the entire Cold War. You just had so many Americans stationed in Germany.
So, originally, though, the World League of American Football had teams all over the world. So, you had the North American West, if you will, had Birmingham, Sacramento, San Antonio, Montreal, New York, Orlando, Raleigh-Durham. which later moved to Ohio, I believe. And then over in Europe, you had Barcelona, Frankfurt, and London.
They've been trying to make London happen for so long.
Yeah. So eventually, I think they realize it's not going to work having them everywhere. And the NFL just kind of says, fuck it, we're just going to put everybody in Europe. Because, like, I think NFL Europe, you could say, probably paid off. Because, like, the NFL has expanded into Europe and made some, like, good grounds. They play a game in London every year that does pretty well.
I would say it wasn't totally success, because I think football ended up becoming... I don't think they're as popular in Germany as they were.
Yeah.
Like, I think... And obviously, part of that was the reintegration of Eastern Germany into Western Germany, like, into one country. Like, obviously, they didn't give a shit about football in East Germany. And any of, like, Berlin didn't really care about, you know... It was Frankfurt. It was like the old West German hotspot cities where there was a big American influence.
Yeah.
It wasn't the worst. I mean, it ended up becoming a place where guys could get reps instead of being like a third string on a team.
No, and like, listen, these are two quarterbacks who went to Super Bowls. Kurt Warner and Jake Delhomme came through NFL Europe.
Also, Jake Delhomme, single greatest performance of any quarterback in the history of the Super Bowl.
So,
I mean, you laugh. He was awesome in that Super Bowl.
It's true.
He played better than Tom Brady in that game. It's just John Casey kicked the ball out of bounds, you know, on a
Yeah, people forget that. So yeah,
the Carolina Panthers would have a Super Bowl and Jake Delhomme would be an MVP if John Casey just knew how to kick a squib. Never forget that.
And the NFL kind of kept going. I mean, the NFL Europe went, almost 20 years? No, 10 to 15 years.
It lasted a pretty good long while, but yeah, for a lot of that time, it was subsidized. So it's
hard 100%. I mean, that's the only reason you'll ever see success from one of these is because it was subsidized so well. But let's head back in time, back to 1993. This is around the time... for like various political or sponsorship reasons, the CFL decides to expand to America. And this is something like not a lot of people know about, Dan.
I want you to tell me all about it.
I can tell you a little bit about it, but it wasn't super successful. You had it was mostly on the West Coast, but like really, it's not a super interesting time. But like the big thing to come out of this was this guy kind of pokes his head into maybe owning maybe the whole CFL or one of his expansion teams. The guy's name is Vince McMahon.
Yeah, that would have been something.
Yeah, and Vince McMahon's a name that is associated with a lot of like buying an NFL team. He's very similar to Trump, like big, kind of a less big personality, if you will, but like guy with a lot of money who's an outsider who never like the NFL wouldn't take seriously. But Vince McMahon, you know, almost bought, the Minnesota Vikings in the mid-90s or late 90s?
Yeah, I think he looked around the Vikings. I also think he looked around on the Panthers.
Yeah.
Because there was, like, a time where it looked like Jerry Richardson might have a tough time. Jerry Richardson was not one of the league's biggest, like, wealthiest owners. And I think he also made a move at the Bills. A lot of people tried to buy the Bills over the years.
Yeah. Oh, but I want to point this out about the CFL, like American expansion. It's kind of a disaster everywhere.
Yeah.
One place, though, Baltimore.
Baltimore
averaged about 37,000 fans a game.
Baltimore was so thirsty for it. I mean, basically, that's what got the Ravens. Team, wasn't it?
And if you look through all of these leagues and you like kind of look at the attendance figures or whatever, Baltimore tends to always do really well. Like Baltimore loves fucking pro football because there's nothing really to root for in college.
And Baltimore, there's something about Baltimore where even though it's in such close proximity to DC, they will not root for DC teams.
No, because like even NBA, like most of the people there, Knicks or 76ers fans.
They will not cheer for DC under any circumstance.
Yeah.
Which is why DC might want to, like, I mean, would it be the worst idea in the world if the Wizards just moved to Baltimore?
No, I think it makes more sense to just
move to Baltimore.
They were in Baltimore originally.
They reclaimed the Bullets name and became the Baltimore Bullets once again.
I don't know if you can do the Bullets anymore.
What's wrong?
Do a lot of shooting. They changed the name because there were like
It's not like they had to. The owner just thought it'd be a good idea not to encourage violence. I'm not sure.
But like you could call
calling your team the Bullets was encouraging people to shoot people.
The beauty though with like their color, because their current color scheme is just the old Bullets color scheme. You can call them like the Baltimore Barons, and it's the same thing. But yeah, I think there's no reason to have an NBA team in DC. DC's such a weird town; they don't deserve pro sports, in my opinion.
I mean, has any team ever been popular in DC other than the Redskins?
No, because the Nationals, not really. I think the Capitals do pretty well for NHL, but they're also like really good. So.
Also, a lot of white people.
Yeah.
Now the Nationals, every psychopath in Washington is a Nats fan, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe
like,
so.
Like, every person who wants to make it illegal for women to, like, have a uterus, every single one of those dudes who, like the only tax they could ever get behind is, like, a tax on childbirth. Like, all of those dudes are Nationals fans.
Oh, and I want to point this out really too about the USFL before we kind of move on. It had a pretty lasting impact with the NFL because you saw we talked about Baltimore earlier, kind of got a team problem, but so did Jacksonville. So did Arizona was seen as a place that could host like a major league football team. Oakland,
they might have saved Tampa Bay as a market.
Yeah,
because like there was a ton of pressure. Like maybe we should just move the Buccaneers because maybe that's why they can't win. It was like, Oh no, Tampa's fine. The Buccaneers are just bad,
poorly run.
Yeah, they're just really dumb at running that thing.
And then I want to talk about this one. In 1987, we see the formation of maybe the most successful, like true outlaw football league of all time, and that's Arena Football. I mean, technically, it's still going today in its form, and was started before I was even born.
A couple of bankruptcies later.
Yeah, but this is a league that more or less has continued, not consecutively, but it's been around for 30-plus years.
Yeah.
Arena football.
They hit on, like, a whole new, and obviously the biggest success story is Kurt Warner.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But, I mean...
They basically hit on a whole new way of presenting football.
Yeah, and for a while it worked as, like, a really kind of niche thing. And, like, we joke about Arena Football, but it is, like, one of the true success stories in, like, minor outlaw, like, sports leagues ever. That, like, didn't end up merging with a bigger league or whatever.
Yeah, it just keeps on keeping on. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, they had people forget, but in the aughts, when NBC was starved for any kind of sports, AFL was on your TV every weekend. I don't know if you were watching it, but it was there.
You had no interest in it, but by God, here it is.
Yeah. Dan, what do you remember, like, the rules from the AFL?
Well, the field is, what, 50 yards?
50 yards.
You only get two plays to get a first down?
I believe it was three. Or is that the CFL?
The CFL's three.
Okay.
But I believe it's two, and I think in the first down, like, 8 yards instead?
Yeah, I got it right here. Field was 50 yards. The goalposts are 9 feet wide.
That's a good move.
Yeah. NFL is NFL's 18 feet wide. So, like,
yeah.
But, like,
cut that shit in half. Yeah.
Yeah.
So make the kicks, you know, you got to be more accurate because basically you can kick a field goal from the first moment you get the ball.
Yeah. Each team, you get 8 players on the field at once instead of 11.
Again, makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So automatically, you know, running the ball is going to be less of a priority because you ain't going to have the number of big uglies.
Yeah. And one of the other big things is like receivers got to get a forward start before each play. Which made it a lot more fun and like different to look at, and like I think,
and that's a Canadian Football League thing too.
Yeah, yeah, and little things like that I think really helped with the success of this league. And Yeah, I mean, there's not a ton to say because it's super boring, to be honest, the AFL. But, like, it was super successful, though.
Yeah, because what the AFL allowed you to do is that if you were just, like, some... I mean, almost every city in America, even, like, podunk places like Greensboro, they have an arena. Like, you know, as anybody who's ever watched wrestling knows, there's a lot of shit towns that have a decent-sized arena big enough for WWE to be in. Like Jackson, Mississippi. Jackson, Mississippi will never get a pro football team.
Yeah.
You know, but they can get an arena team. And yeah. So that's where the Arena League was very successful, is not necessarily in places like New York City, you know, where it's like, well, I'm just going to watch the Jets. But
in Albany, New York, then yeah. Because you got to travel 2 hours to see anything professional there, you know?
Yeah, who wants to do anything in Rochester?
Yeah, and the other big thing with the AFL success was, like, this is pre-Netflix, you know, YouTube era. So, like, what else is you going to do on a Friday night? It was probably a similar price point to go to the movies or out for a nice dinner with your family.
Why not? And also, you're a loner. Your wife divorced you. You're not going to a movie.
And Dan, did you know this? The AFL is so successful, there's a Chinese league.
God.
And their Wikipedia page last says, in June of 2017, it was announced that the 17th season would be moved to the spring of 2018. I have no idea if that's the league postponed that second season again, announcing they would not play until 2019.
Well, that's definitely a sign things are going well.
Well, in China.
Oh,
but that's how successful China. The AFL was, where they thought they could bring it to a market that never watches football. But it's a fun brand of football. It's a good way to introduce football.
Hey, all of you have, you know, you're all big fans of basketball. They play those in arenas. All of your cities now have an arena so that you can have a basketball team.
Yeah.
How about you start up an arena football league?
Yeah. So anyway, we'll get to the yachts.
Oh, man.
And we get our boy.
The XFL!
And we've talked XFL before.
And there's been a feature-length documentary about it.
Yeah, and, like, as you learn, it sounds like an exciting idea, but, like, really, the XFL is pretty fucking boring. Games weren't fun, there wasn't, like, any real controversy. But they did give us the Skycam.
They did give us the Skycam. I would say the biggest thing, the basic thing that was oriented around why the XFL came into being is, one, the NFL owners wouldn't sell Vince a team. The Canadian Football League wouldn't sell their whole league to him. And the NBC, and particularly Dick Ebersol, who ran NBC Sports, were pissed off that they had lost the NFL. So you had these two executives who were basically pissed off at the NFL, and they decided, let's go into business together and start a football league. And they, you know, you have this Trump influence, because Trump has a long-standing relationship with NBC. He would end up having a show on NBC. Obviously, he's had a long-time on-again, off-again relationship with Vince McMahon. And if you know, what was Donald Trump telling them about why the USFL failed? Well, we had too many owners who didn't have enough money.
Yeah.
How do you fix that?
Vince McMahon is a billionaire for the first time, and this was 20 years ago when being a billionaire, like, was still a big deal.
Yeah, and how do you fix that issue? We won't have any owners. We'll own the league together.
Yeah.
You know, it was a 50-50 partnership between NBC and and Vince McMahon. And so the idea was, well, NBC will never have to worry about us picking up and moving. And, you know, NBC and Vince McMahon are going to make all the profits off of it. And down the road, if this thing is super successful, we can sell the franchises and we'll make more money than God. The problem with this thing went is you had a guy from the TV business, and then you had another guy who had been in this promotion business, the wrestling business, and nobody involved in this thing really understood football.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon's understanding of football was extremely limited to the 70s. He, like, basically his football czar was Dick Butkus. Dick Butkus is one of the most famous and greatest football players of all time, but Dick Butkus was not exactly hip to the latest and greatest in football innovation come 2000.
Yeah.
And so you just get a bunch of coaches running up the middle for 3 yards in a cloud of dust, you know, in the XFL. It was a lot of really brutal to watch football.
Yeah.
They didn't give the teams enough time to practice. They didn't give these teams enough time to sit together, and they really did not hire the level of coaching that they needed. You know, when you look at the USFL, Steve Spurrier, Jim Mora, Pepper Rogers, you know, you had a number of coaches who were young, who hadn't had the chance to be a head coach yet, who looked at the USFL as, this is my chance to be a head coach, way younger than I would have if I kept waiting through the college or the NFL system to try to
but
get a job.
But also on top of that, you had Herschel Walker, Jim Kelly, Steve Young. These
sure.
You were some of the best ever. These are Hall of Famers.
They paid a premium for star players, and yeah, the XFL's two biggest players were Tommy Maddox, who had been a failure for the Atlanta Falcons, a famous draft bust at that point, but a guy that everybody in the NFL thought could have been good, so he wasn't like a, you know, it wasn't totally a shocker that he ended up being good in this league, and Rod Smart, better known as He Hate Me.
No, and actually, the guy no one ever talks about, was it Lavernius Coles? I think played in the XFL and was like,
are you sure? Because I'm pretty sure he was doing pretty well for the Jets at this point.
I thought he was with the XFL. Was it him or like Santana Moss or someone weird like that?
That does not ring a bell.
There's a receiver. I'll look that up really quick.
But you know, so basically, you've got a football league run by people who see that there's money in pro football, who have an axe to grind against the NFL, but who just don't understand football worth a shit, and the product ends up being garbage, and you know, it's not long before the XFL, there are people who want to try to do revisionist history, who want to look back on some of the ratings that the XFL got, and when you look at some of their ratings, if you have a modern eye for what things do on television today, you'll be like, well, that's not that bad, that's better than some stuff does in primetime now. This was 2000. This was 2001, I believe. The ratings the XFL was doing in primetime on a network were setting new records for the most abysmal, the most horrible. Like, they were setting a new low standard for what was previously thought possible. Like, people used to think that you could put on, like, a test pattern on a network channel, especially NBC at this point. This is like NBC where like Seinfeld and Friends and like, this was not the NBC we know of today, which has spent the last, you know, the last 10, 15 years being the lowest rated channel on television. This was NBC back when cool hip people watched NBC and they were putting up ratings that were horrifyingly bad. They kind of became like the laughing stock in the history of television. Like, not just sports. The XFL was like a groundbreaking low point in the history of television in America. Needless to say, they only got 1 year. Nobody was too interested to come back. Well, Vince was wanting to do a second year. I should take that back. Vince was ready to go do a second year. And, basically, Dick Ebersol and it told him we can't do this.
Yeah, just wasn't bombing on NBC. It was bombing on UPN, TNN.
But they were going to continue it. Just like when NBC pulled out, they were going to do another year because that's how much Vince bought into this shit. And that's when Viacom and UPN said we can't do this.
No, but you wonder though if they got the second year, maybe it's a little bit better.
I doubt it. there was no hope for that league because the people running it really did not know what they were doing.
And did you know, Dan, that one of the XFL players went on to the WWE?
Who's that?
Former WWE CW superstar Ricky Ortiz.
Well, who did he become?
Ricky Ortiz.
Where do I know Ricky Ortiz from?
He was on ECW and he held up like a towel.
God, I do not remember this man at all.
He had like a fro.
I do not remember this man at all.
What was his, what was his big catchphrase? Oh, that's the wrong Ricky Ortiz. I'm sorry. Well, there was a Ricky Ortiz that was a wrestler that was in the XFL. There's also one that plays for the Atlanta Falcons.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yes. No, he, let's see, what did he do in WWE ever? Nothing.
Yep, that makes sense.
He defeated Chavo Guerrero once. He was also married to Layla L.
Oh, the wrestler?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. There you go. Now I'm still married to this day, apparently. So, Dan, but there, as we get to the odds, no one's really taking the big risks anymore, though, right? Because, like, NFL Europe's kind of still humming, so, like, there's no reason to think NFL needs a developmental league. So, like, if you're an investor, you're thinking, well, this is a dumb investment, right? XFL just flopped.
The XFL really put a lot of people off this idea for a long time. And there's another very interesting thing, though, that does come out of the XFL. The NFL decides it is a bad idea to have NBC sitting around as a total free agent, and they create, they move, you know, ABC gives them the opening because ABC decides to move Monday Night Football off of ABC.
Yeah, because they want to go all in on ESPN at this point because ESPN was literally saving Disney from like
ESPN was making more money than anything else at Disney. They were single-handedly keeping the company afloat. Plus, for years, people at ABC had complained that Monday Night Football made it impossible for them to program Monday nights because they, like, at the biggest quarter, like the fall season, which is the number one part of the year for television, you could not have something on.
No, and look,
because it, you know, Monday Night Football would always be taking up that time.
To an extent, they were right because their most popular Monday night show is The Bachelor, which is a huge hit.
Yeah, and you know, when you look back at the history of the Monday Night Football, when Monday Night Football started, ABC literally had no shows. The only thing that had ever been semi-popular on ABC was, like, the 1950s Zorro show.
Yeah.
Like, the only thing anybody knew about Disney was, like, the Disney movies that would come on, like, Sunday. They would play, like, Pinocchio.
Yeah.
You know?
And, so, like, even down to this day, though, NBC Sports are, like, what, relegated to the weekend? I mean, ABC Sports are mostly, what, on the weekend?
Yeah.
Like, Saturdays or Sundays. So.
You're right. And they basically brought, like, they basically have some ESPN games that they'll brand as ABC Sports at this point.
Yeah. But the only thing you'll really see sports-wise on ABC is what? Like, some weird winter sports sometimes, then NBA, and then college football.
Yeah. And so what ABC looked at is, like, we'll move this to ESPN, and what that left Sunday Night Football open, and, you know, ESPN, or, because ESPN had been the home of Sunday Night Football, since it's getting Monday Night Football, why not move, you know, sell that to NBC? Now, and NBC's out of the minor league football game.
And at this point, NBC's kind of low-key struggling for ratings, because, like, they have The Office, which does good, like, ad rates, but it wasn't, like, the number one show every year.
Yeah, this was at the low point of NBC, where they had really... You know, they had that great period in the 90s where they were, like, basically the home of, like, the comedies that people thought were cool. Like,
two of the biggest sitcoms of all time in Friends and Seinfeld. Like, those two are top 10 all-time sitcoms in terms of
popularity. And they also had Will and Grace, which would have been the most popular show on Fox.
Yeah.
But because, you know, because this is the network of Seinfeld and Friends, people forget that show was on.
Yeah.
They also had Dharma and Greg, didn't they? Was that ABC?
Because Kramer was on an episode of Dharma and Greg.
Yeah, so, like, you had NBC had built this reputation, and they had
you. Darman Greg was on ABC, I believe.
Okay, Frasier was on NBC, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it was Cheers. It's like, in a two-decade run, NBC is probably four of the biggest sitcoms of all time.
Yeah.
And plus,
they had Cosby, didn't they?
Yes, I think so. They had Fresh Prince.
Yeah, so like NBC had basically been the
home. And Law and Order.
And then that was what I was going to say. They had two major Law and Order franchises. I mean, I feel like SVU has been this juggernaut for so long that people have forgotten how good OG Law and Order was and how big that show was.
I know you're not a big Seinfeld guy, but did you know that the SVU lady was on an episode of Seinfeld?
I did know she's done lots of comedy, so that does not surprise me.
So, and so is Courtney Cox. So,
yeah. But original NFL Law and Order. Says
we're going to look at it. Yeah. So all of a sudden, though, every network.
All these shows. But all these shows we're talking about on NBC all kind of end at the same time. And suddenly all NBC is SVU. And then a bunch of sitcoms that nobody watches.
Yeah. Or that only, like, rich people watch. So, like, that only gets you so far.
And then, like, a bunch of attempts to, like, remember when they tried to reboot Knight Rider? And that lasted for, like, five episodes?
And they really...
Remember when Deadwood ended and they signed up Al Swearengen to do a remake of a Bible story that they ended up moving... Like, I think that was the fastest any show got slow canceled. Because they aired the pilot and then immediately moved that thing to the Saturday Night Death slot.
Well, like,
yep, we will only show the things we got in the bank. We are not making another one of these. Then there is no way we will.
Do they have Deal or No Deal? Or is that Fox?
They did have Deal or No Deal.
Because even during the game show, okay, so I guess they had the second most successful game show during that era. But, I mean, that was it. So, but yeah, after all this, though, every major network that wants to do sports or has money to do sports is in bed with the NFL.
Right. Which means it's now, if you want to start up an outlaw football league, where are you going to go? Yeah. You no longer have that, you know, you don't have ESPN, you don't have ABC, you don't have and now that NBC white whale of like, well, we can just get it to NBC that we have a chance, that's gone. And then you start having this other thing where you start having the cable channels start all becoming owned by like the same five companies.
Yeah.
So you don't even have like these different cable channels you could possibly get on because all the cable channels are owned by the same people.
But we do in the late end. This is also probably a pretty important omission. You have a giant recession in like 2007, right? So like, there's not a lot of extra money to spend on a football league that probably won't work.
Yeah, most of the rich people at this point are still having some problems.
Yeah, but we do get one league in the late aughts, and that's the United Football League. This thing lasts 3 years. It goes on the Versus channel and HDNet. So that's who was left.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the United Football League. So,
and they never
they had go more into than, it.
Yeah. I'm sorry, real quick. They never had more than five teams playing at once.
Rough. Rough. You have got to have at least enough teams to have four football games a weekend. Yeah. I feel like
you could have
two. I feel like, you know, there's a league we're going to be talking about shortly that just started up that are pushing the limits of how small a league can be. Five is definitely too small.
Yeah.
But the whole idea behind the UFL was NFL Europe is gone. We need a developmental league that can provide some players for the NFL, that can provide a place for guys to go to prove that they do have a way to make it in the NFL. And the UFL was very aggressive in hiring coaches with NFL experience. I remember Jim Fassel was heavily involved.
Mm-hmm.
And Marty Schottenheimer.
And the other big thing with the UFL was, what was it, I think 2011, 2012, there's an NFL labor shortage. So, like, the UFL was technically the only football that would be on TV for a little bit.
But they were barely on television.
And no one cared.
Because
here's the other thing that we can get into later, but we already have a developmental football league. It's pretty popular, and in some pockets of the country, it's bigger than the NFL.
It's called college football. Yeah.
Well, we don't need a developmental league. But
the other big thing that comes out of the UFL is the Omaha Nighthawks coach, Joe Moglia, who basically just bought his way into the league because he wanted to get back into football. And he was the president of TD Ameritrade, and he's now the head coach at Coastal Carolina.
Yeah.
Got that job the same way, by basically just buying himself the job. But, you know, that's... The UFL proved, though, if you do not have real television, you cannot make it as a football league. You have got to have real television that people have... You know, there's a thing... I once remember Bruce Mitchell saying, the PW Torch writer. And what he... I remember this is a thing he talked about with, like, the death of wrestling territories in the 80s. And it's that Americans have no room for a second-place football league. So whenever you have somebody who starts saying, oh, the NFL's so popular, people love pro football, we should give them more pro football, you have already fundamentally fucked up.
Yeah.
That's one of the lessons of all this. Because Americans don't have room for the second-best football. You have got to present it in a different enough way where they can go, yeah, maybe this is in some way better. You have got to find a way where what you're doing is better than what the NFL is doing. You got to be like the AFL where it's like, well, they got better quarterbacks. The NFL, like the rest of the teams might be better, but the AFL's got better quarterbacks. Or, you know, the AAFC where it's like, well, I don't know about all these teams, but the Cleveland Browns could whoop their ass. You know, you have to have that. Because if you don't, people won't watch it because they'll just look at it and go, well, that's just half-baked, half-assed, and they don't want to watch it. And, you know, when you look at all these places that have tried to start up and compete at professional wrestling, you know, we'll use WWE for example. WCW spent a ton of money to compete with WWE over the years that Turner owned them, and they competed with them for what, 2 years out of like 12?
Yeah.
Because nobody's really interested in second best wrestling.
Well, and
nobody is interested in second best football.
And here's the other thing with football. Bad football's really boring. The NFL has issues with this. Like they saw ratings go down because they didn't have enough good quarterbacks for a little bit. When sports is bad, it's really bad and it's like boringly bad.
Yes.
And that's what hurts most of these leagues is like if you go back and look at the games, they're just boring.
That's and the so kiss that brings And that brings us to our last couple of leagues. Our last two we're going to talk about. One of them is obviously the Alliance of American Football, which is just played its second week. Almost ran out of money almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And it's run by Charlie Ebersole, Dick Ebersole's son. And it's in a lot of ways, you know, you've got him and Vince McMahon have started up, you know, the XFL is back trying to start back up again. And they've both taken different tacks of looking at why the XFL failed. From the Ebersole standpoint, what they've looked at is the reason why the XFL failed is because it tried to take on the NFL. It tried to aggressively compete with the NFL, and that's a huge mistake because it created this huge expectation in people's minds about what the league was going to be that it could never meet. And it also made powerful enemies against the league. So what they've tried to do is partner with the NFL and say, look, we can be not just a developmental league for players. We can be the laboratory where you test out rule changes. And they've also gotten extremely tight with the networks. They've sold themselves to the NFL as like, we're not going to try to compete with you. We'll never try to compete with you. And gotten that NFL seal of approval, which then allowed CBS to feel comfortable getting in business with them.
And I think and
they've gone out of their way to create a rule structure around the league to make the league as television friendly as humanly possible.
Yeah.
That thing you were just talking about where boring football is death, trying to change the rules to like give semi-pro quarterbacks a chance to compete so that you can have an explosive offense. Yeah. Without having the best talent to make that
and
happen.
Here's where they kind of took a lesson from the USFL. They've They've gone to markets that aren't traditionally strong NFL, except for what? Atlanta, which you can't say super strong.
In Atlanta, because they have a team in Birmingham, Memphis, and Orlando, you kind of have to have a team in Atlanta.
Yeah, you just kind of have, and it just makes sense. But they said, let's not try to get NFL fans, because NFL fans want to watch the NFL.
Yeah.
It's like you talk about wrestling. WWE fans want to watch WWE because, like, the production looks the best. You're not going to look as good as them. It's going to look more professional. They said, let's get the college fan who maybe doesn't watch the NFL or, like, will watch more football because he likes college football.
And because the college football season is so incredibly short.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know.
And, as we mentioned earlier, I think the reason a lot of these leagues are never successful as a developmental league or a second league, we already have it. College football. College football is arguably, you know, bigger than the NFL in pockets of the country. It's, for a long time in America, it was more popular than the NFL. I think that's something we always forget to mention when we talk about competing pro leagues. It's like, there is one. It's just the pay structure is fucked up.
Yeah, the reason why they're able to compete is they don't have to pay their players. They don't have to pay people involved.
Yeah, or if they do pay them, it's someone else.
Yeah, it's somebody else doing the pay.
Or they're paying them in the form of a scholarship. Yeah, or whatever, however you want to phrase
link,
that.
Link. Like, yeah.
But I think that's the, when you look at, like, why there never been, like, a successful second-tier sports league for most of in any sport in North America. Because college kind of nails it. And, like, places where college, you know, isn't as big in that sport, we've seen, like, those kind of minor leagues do better. Whether it's baseball or even MLS.
Or hockey.
Yeah, or hockey or soccer, MLS.
Yeah.
Because there's not a college game to kind of turn your head and look at.
No.
So, I think that's the big lesson to take away from all of this is there already is a developmental league. And if you're going to do it, the AFL is probably the best way to do it, and it's probably not going to work.
You'll never be able to do what the AFL did again because there's no NBC. Like, when you look at what made the AFL work, you had three networks on television, and only one of them had pro football. And, you know, this is something we didn't touch on enough. This was before the Super Bowl. This is before the NFL was the NFL. You know, the NFL became that after the Super Bowl is what made the NFL what we know of it as today.
Yeah.
And so before the Super Bowl comes into existence, you got a fighting chance against them. But you had NBC, which half the country, like, you only had three channels. And in a lot of places in America, you only had two. There's a lot of places in rural America where you couldn't even get ABC. You only got CBS and NBC. And so if there's only two channels on television and one of them has the other football league on it, guess what? You got a pretty good shot.
Yeah.
There's nothing like that today where you can just go and get a TV deal and suddenly you're legit.
No, and the other thing is if you're just trying to get butts in the seats of those games, there's more stuff to do now.
Yeah. It's harder to build those kind of brands.
Yeah, it's easier to stay home and just watch a movie on Netflix or DVD or whatever.
Now,
and cheaper,
and there's fewer people watching sports in general. Yeah. Sports is becoming more niche,
yeah, especially football.
You know, so the AAF of all of these teams, they seem to have learned the most lessons, and I would say they probably have the best chance just because they have gone out of their way to not make an enemy of the NFL.
Yeah,
and the only way of being successful is if the NFL does not look at you as a thing they need to crush.
And
because if the NFL decides they want to crush you, you'll just never get on TV.
And the other big thing, they appeal to the right fans.
Yeah. So that leaves us with the XFL, which has not started up. They have made some announcements. Mm-hmm. Bob Stoops is going to be coaching their Dallas team.
They
if they ever start up.
They're associated with the Spring Football League, which is like a weird afterbirth from like the UFL, I think.
Yeah.
We didn't even mention that, but it's like something that like literally just scouts attend.
Yeah. The XFL, I really think is going to be a giant disaster because Vince McMahon is not Charlie Ebersole. He doesn't have a long relationship with a lot of people in television.
And he's a lot older now.
He's an old man who's never been particularly great at building bridges with people. And if you look at the way Vince's mind is wired, he's always looking for somebody to compete against and beat. And there's no competing with the NFL. And he's going to try. Because yeah. You just know that's his nature. And he's never going to get a TV deal. This is going to be a disaster. He's not, I mean, his only hope is getting on Fox Sports 2 or Fox Sports 1. But even then, does anybody really think the NFL is going to let Rupert Murdoch put him on television?
Or will it even matter? Who watches Fox Sports 2? Who even gets Fox Sports 2?
Fox Sports 2? I don't get it in HD. I don't know about you, but it's in standard def.
Yeah.
And it's shrunk on the sides of the screens. Like, it's that little, yeah. You know, the little letterbox.
My hot prediction on the XFL, too, is, like, it just never happens.
Yeah. I think Vince McMahon is not... I mean, Vince McMahon is old and kind of senile at this point. But even he's not stupid enough to think you can go and do anything major without a TV deal. I mean, I think even he knows that if he doesn't get a TV, it's not like if he woke up tomorrow and SmackDown didn't have a home, he could put it on the network and get some value out of it because the network is full of people who like to watch wrestling.
Yeah.
They'll probably watch a wrestling show on the network.
And I think that's the other thing is like Vince McMahon's an attractive idea to start a secondary sports league, but like most people are wrestling fans because they don't like regular sports.
They want more drop. Like that's they're either kids. Or they're people who don't like that sports doesn't always give them what they're looking, like the happy ending that they're looking for.
But like, and that was the issue with the XFL the first time around. Like, they'll watch the first time. It's like, whatever. You've been telling me to. I'm going to do what you say. But they're not going to stick around. And that's kind of what the XFL ran into, was not a lot of WWE fans or football fans.
Or if they are, they just like the NFL.
Yeah. Or if they are, there's not enough to make a difference.
Like, I'm not sure there's a ton of WWE fans who want a WWE style football league. They watch the NFL on Sundays.
Yeah, and they might watch WWE because like they don't want to think about sports.
Like they watched enough. They watched it all day.
Do something different, Because like, guess what, Dan? Like, I don't turn on like Hulu and go, man, let me watch a bad version of the sports I was just watching. I go, no, I want to watch a sitcom or whatever.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, we'll see if the AFL works. It's probably the best shot. But looking at history, it ain't gonna be the last. Every decade someone tries this shit, and every decade someone fails.
Yep, I mean they've tried every decade since the 50s.
Yeah, I mean they've honestly, tried this. Since the turn of the 1900s.
Yeah,
we've seen a new league try to do something every 10 years.
Basically, every sports, you know? Every 10 years, somebody talks themselves into, I've got a way to make... Because everybody looks at it and goes, this is the most popular sport in America. There's got to be a way for me to make money off this without being involved with the NFL.
Yeah, and the hard truth is, there is. It's just college football already has that slot.
Yeah.
That's the lesson.
I feel like 95% of this is Yankees who don't get college football. Who don't realize that college football has basically fulfilled all this that they're trying to fulfill.
That's always the weird thing to me. It's like, you don't see this in other sports.
Yeah.
You never see like a basketball league that's like, we're going to compete with the NBA.
Yeah, it happened once in the 70s and the NBA was at its all-time lowest level of popularity.
Yeah. And it probably saved the NBA.
Yeah, it definitely did.
Hockey, you don't. Who cares about hockey? You know, you don't see that in Canada. You know, there's not even a competing league in Canada. What's the most compete? The other pro leagues in what? Russia.
Everybody kind of just. Well, there's a Turkish league that's very big, and there's a Greek league that's very
same. That's all part of the USSR.
We'll be again. God hope. God willing. I think a lot of people who start this stuff up just don't think about the idea that if you're a diehard football fan, you're watching football every weekend on Saturday and Sunday for like 3 or 4 months, and then college ends and it's like all NFL. I mean, I don't want to make this sound sexist, but there's a lot of wives that when the Super Bowl is over, they're like, all right, enough.
Yeah. Oh, and like there's yard work to do, you know?
Like, it's time for you to actually spend time with your family.
And here's the other, like, the big thing with like spring leagues and such, and I think why the NFL tends to be more popular. You can go outside in the spring. There's stuff to do. The weather's nice. When the fall, it's cold, it's rainy, winter, half the country you can't even move. So I think that's always been like football's big advantage too, was like it's in the seasons that kind of suck to do anything else.
Yeah.
There's a lot more shit going on in spring. A lot more festivals, whatever, church cook-offs, weddings. You're seeing it in spring and summer.
Yeah. A lot of weddings.
Yeah. So.
So I'm optimistic for the AAF. I feel like they have learned some of the best lessons of why this stuff has failed. If they don't make it, let me put it this way. If the AAF doesn't make it, nobody should ever try this again. Because if they fail at it, I guess if they end up failing because they just were really stupid with spending their money and somebody goes, well, I can do the AAF and I'm better at managing money.
No, I think the only way you really see this is like there's some weird lawsuit with the NCAA. Like, maybe they have to pay players, and they're just like, fuck that.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, college football's not going to be as popular if they've got to pay the players.
Yeah.
Let me try to step in and steal that audience.
Yeah. Or someone just realizes it has enough money where something weird happens with college, and they're just like, well, we'll just do college football, but we pay you.
Yeah.
Maybe the G League model ends up working, you know?
But even then, it's not like people are going to pay to watch that. I mean, if college football completely implodes and then the NFL goes, God dang, we need a developmental league. And then you have something running. And then instead of them starting their own league up, they just invest in you. Basically do it like the Jim Cornette at OVW thing where you just start up a shitty wrestling company and then convince WWE to pay you money.
Yeah.
That's the only way that works, but. I mean, if the AAS fails, I don't think anybody should try this for like 20 years unless something
weird happens with like the only thing that would make it work is an outside force.
Yeah.
It's like unrelated to place from the judicial system or whatever would make the only big difference. So yeah, I think that's a fun look at outlaw football leagues though.
But yeah. And you got anything else?
I think that's it. Do we know what we're going to talk about next week?
We may need a meeting for that.
Yeah. Maybe something basketball. Maybe baseball or basketball related, though. There's probably a fun story in there. So.
Let's find something interesting about baseball to deep dive into.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it for me. Just quick plug. Check out that John Boyce video on punts. It might be one of the best YouTube videos I've ever seen in my life. I think it's Search for the Saddest Punt in Football History or something like that.
That's funny. We now plug people with way bigger audiences than us.
We just plug stuff we like, you know. And check out Seinfeld on Hulu.
And check out God of War for the PS4. It's pretty good.
And the award.
I won't say it's great, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's it for me. We'll be back next week.
And on that note, play the music, Jason.